Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Everyone, and welcome to episode 111 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hi, Megan.
Hey, Sarah. How's your summer?
I know, it is like midsummer.
Like half over is how it is.
Right in the middle of it. Unless, of course, you're listening to this far in the future and it's Christmas, in which case, Merry Christmas. That will happen. Yeah. But no, we are recording this midsummer. Both of us have had busy summers so far, but we're keeping up our podcast recording schedule. And we have another episode of Listener Questions with our solicited advice, as I like to say.
We don't give unsolicited advice.
Well, we do. Just every solicited. Other episode is us giving unsolicited advice.
That's true.
This one.
I feel like if they actually listen to the episode, they're sort of soliciting it.
Yeah, you that's agree? True. You're opting okay. in to our
You're many opting in to our advice.
Many opinions.
Such as it is. Yeah.
So we've been collecting, as you know, if you listened last week, we took three listener questions. We're going to do three more today. And we do this every couple of months, I would say, where you can either email or record yourself asking a question, and we will weigh in. And I'm loving the questions we're getting because they're really specific. So we can actually kind of play our Dear Abby, kind of put on our advice column hats and weigh in on somebody's actual, you know, actual questions. So,
yeah, I love it. These are some of my favorites.
Well, before we dive in, we are welcoming back Kind Snacks as our sponsor today. So you guys have, I'm sure, seen Kind bars in your coffee shops and your grocery stores, and they make delicious, healthy snacks with ingredients that you can actually see and pronounce. Nothing funky in there. But what they've got going on right now is a $10 assortment, a variety pack that comes shipped to your door for $10 with free shipping. And it was so much fun to try these out, don't you think, Megan?
I love it. It's like snacks for grown-ups.
It is.
You know?
Yes.
Not that my kids don't love them, because they do, but I'm kind of like, no, these are for me.
Totally.
These are mine. And the flavors are a little more sophisticated. And yeah, I love that they're all natural ingredients and I understand what's in them.
So, yes. Yeah. Nothing funky in there. But also, I mentioned this last week, but when I'm looking for a quick snack like this, I'm not really looking for like a meal replacement bar or a high protein, like the kind that you see at the gym sometimes.
Right.
I just want something that's not terrible for me.
Right.
And that kind of combines. I love that salty sweet. A lot of their bars have kind of a salty sweet, kind of scratches that itch of wanting to snack, but you know, you're putting good, wholesome ingredients in your body. So,
yep. I've been rehearsing this week. I'm in a tech rehearsal for a show I'm directing, and
yes.
I've had a Kind bar in my bag every night because I know at some point the kids are just going to wear me out.
Yes. And it's like I've said, it keeps me from making bad choices later if I can head off that hunger with something good. So, for $10, you can get a variety pack and try a bunch of their cool flavors. And then that leads you right into the Kind Snack Club. If you want, you'll get $10 off your first month of the Kind Snack Club, where you'll receive those monthly snacks at a discount. So if you just want the variety pack, get started there. You go to kindsnacks.com/themomhour. Again, that's kindsnacks.com/themomhour to get your variety pack. And then you can decide if you want to go forward with their snack club. I just love the idea that I wouldn't have to think about adding those things to my grocery list and that there's always healthy snacks for me in the pantry. So, love that idea. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and play our first question. Samantha sent this in by recording her voice and emailing it to us, which you can always do. We love to hear your voices. So let's go ahead and listen to Samantha's question now.
Hey guys, my name is Samantha. I'm from Michigan. I have a daughter who is almost 1 year old, and we are looking at starting the transition to her big girl bedroom. We are starting to think about expanding our family, and I want to give her plenty of time to make the transition so we're not worried about new baby plus new bedroom and all of that fun stuff. My question is, are there any tips and tricks that you guys have found to make that transition a little bit easier? We tried nap time in her big girl bedroom the other day, and it was a great game that we were playing to get off the bed, and then mommy would put us back on the bed, and then we'd crawl over and we'd jump off the bed and back and forth, and we ended up doing nap time back in the crib. So any tips on getting her to stay in her bed when it's time to sleep, or is that something that she will just learn as we go?
Okay, Samantha. So I don't know about you, Megan, if you picked up on this, but I feel like Samantha is a planner, kind of like me. Mm-hmm. I'm always thinking 6 months ahead, or in her case, one kid ahead. And I think that's really normal. And I think a lot of moms do it. I think in this case, it might be getting her so far ahead of herself that this baby might not be quite ready, to be honest.
That struck me. I think you know, it's kind of like we've talked about potty training before. You can do it the hard way for a year or the easy way in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And I think when you start that young, if they're just really not ready for it, you're kind of working against yourself and you're working against their developmental abilities.
Yes.
And just kind of creating a lot of work. So I just want to set that. I mean, I think it's cool to be and smart to be thinking ahead. But if you are thinking ahead so hard that you're ahead of yourself,
well,
you're not coming out ahead.
And I think what I was going to sort of start with is I think it's totally possible to think ahead and plan ahead without actually expecting your 11-month-old to sleep in her big girl bed. So I think both are kind of possible. And I am that planner type. So just for context, I moved my first child from a crib to a big girl bed about 2 months before she turned two. So she was actually still one, maybe a month before. She was like 22 months, maybe 23 months. And that was in preparation for a sibling. She was very mature and rule following and compliant, and still is to this day. So that was one situation. My second child, I kept in the crib until he was almost three, even after I had had a new baby. So a sibling can prompt this, but a sibling, I don't think, has to boot the first kid out, especially
if
you space your kids close. There's lots of alternatives. We kept our third baby with us in our room longer than I typically did. Knowing that I wanted to keep the middle child in his crib, he wasn't ready to move, and I wasn't ready to be dealing with a crib to bed transition with one kid and then a new baby. Because again, this was with babies two and three. So I kept him in the crib in the nursery for almost, I want to say 4 or 5 months, until the new baby was sleeping slightly better and I knew he was really ready. So those are kind of two extremes. I moved one kid before she was two and one was three. And I think a lot of kids are kind of right in the middle. One is really, really young is one thing I would say to Samantha. Yeah. The other thing I would say, because she talked about nap time is way harder than bedtime for introducing a new bed situation, I think. And that's I think, not just a big kid bed, but Megan, you did co-sleeping. So, you know, anything from getting them to fall asleep without you or whatever new transition you're introducing. Don't you think nap is harder than bed? Just because they're more awake.
About that. Yeah, they're more awake and you're interrupting their day. There's not usually as much time to do, like, it always kind of makes me chuckle a little bit when I read the articles that tell you to like have a nap time routine that takes like a half hour.
Right.
I mean, most moms, you might have that at the end of the day, but most moms don't have several half hour chunks. Like they can just drop everything and then go do a bath in the middle of the day or something.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree. Like naps, unless you're really scheduled with naps, and I never really was, like bedtime happened more or less the same time every night.
Right.
Nap times were a little more flexible in my house. So those were also like the kid, just like the fact that they had to have a nap in the first place was already kind of like, what? And then, you know, oh, it's going to be in this place. I don't think so.
I was structured about naps, but I still think the fact that it's daylight and the fact that they're natural sleepiness, unless you just drove them around in the car until they're half zonked, they just are not as sleepy and therefore way more, like she said in her message,
playful.
Like, oh, this is a fun game. Like, this is a fun new bed. So, Samantha, I'm not saying you did this wrong at all.
Right.
I'm just saying it will get easier both with age, and I probably wouldn't start with naps. I would probably start with bed where you can take the time, like you said, and lower the lights and all that.
Yeah, and all that stuff. Well,
did
the other thing is...
Yeah.
No, that's fine. The other thing I was going to say is that the thing about bedrooms is, which I think can be very confusing, especially for a really young toddler, is that the place where you sleep is often the place where you play.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a separate playroom where the kids like literally never play in their bedrooms.
Right.
I think that even makes it more confusing sometimes for little ones. They're like, wait, I mean, especially if it's broad daylight.
Right.
And they're, you know, they've been sitting on the floor, you know, playing with their blocks or whatever. And now it's like, okay, and now it's time to lay down. It's like, well, but no, the blocks are right there.
Yeah.
I can see them.
Yeah.
So yeah. One thing that popped into my head is I think having started this transition so far in advance, you do have a great opportunity to take your time just introducing this room as the place, like the idea.
Yeah.
Like this is now going to be, this is your room. This is your bedroom. Sleep happens here. But I don't think it has to mean all of a sudden, like, this is all going to come together and your little girl's going to be sleeping there.
Well, and if I had to guess, I think Samantha's also thinking ahead to future babies, which she mentioned, and like wanting to have plenty of time to adjust and not wanting to have the the oldest feel displaced. And I think those are all great considerations. I just don't think it takes a year. I think having a buffer. And so that kind of comes back to the way I did it. I did it on with one kid. I wanted a couple of months before the new baby arrived to help with the transition. And then on the other end, I waited till after the baby was born. And then I waited another few months. So as long as you're not doing it like the day you bring the new baby home from the hospital, that would be jarring. That could feel like, oh, man, now I don't get to sleep in my,
out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I think there's probably, I would think, 6 to 8 weeks on either end, or a couple, 2 or 3 months is plenty. And also, just to go back to what I said earlier, keeping one child in a crib past a new baby's arrival, you have lots of options. You can go pack and play for the first few months. You can borrow a second crib. I mean, I know lots of families who have had two cribs and rocked two cribs for, you know, a good amount of time. And also, if you have bedroom choices, and maybe she's thinking about like moving a bedroom or redecorating a bedroom for a new baby. And we moved a couple of times when new babies were coming. So that always felt like that was also a consideration. You can always set up the crib in what will be the big girl room, but have it be a crib for a little bit longer, I guess. I'm just saying there's options.
There are options. That was the other thing I was going to say is, you know, maybe moving the bed, the sleep environment that the baby is used to and one still is a baby, into the new sleeping space, you know. And I don't know, do they make convertible cribs anymore? We had one. I don't know if they make them anymore.
They do. My experience and a lot of people I've talked to is like, if you're planning to have 2 or 3 kids in a row, you end up just using the crib for the next baby and buying an inexpensive toddler bed or just going right to a full size bed. So unless it's your last kid or there's a big gap in between kids, I don't know a lot of people who've used the convertible function, but they do make them. They also make toddler beds, which I think look adorable. But I think kids grow out of them pretty fast. So
I never had success with the toddler beds because they're so close to the floor. Honestly, I felt like it invited my kid to get off the bed.
Right.
I don't know what it is about it.
Yeah.
Psychologically, I look at it and think I wouldn't stay in that thing.
Right. Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because one other thing I wanted to mention is the safety rails that they make for full size beds. So let's say you have a twin or a double, but a regular bed that a grown-up could sleep in. They make these inexpensive bed rails, and they're not very pretty, but you only use them for whatever, a few months until. But my kids were honestly fooled. They thought they were still in a crib because these bed rails, if one end is up against the wall, say, and the other has this bed rail, it is the height of, like, say, a crib mattress to the height of a crib.
Are you talking about the mesh ones?
Yes.
And
they're a pain for grown-ups to get in. I mean, I remember trying to crawl in to read my kid a story, and I'm like, pregnant, and they're not the greatest thing for long term, but I will say they fool some little toddlers into really, they feel like they're still confined. So that is another, especially with those, you know, like hers who wants to play and thinks it's fun to get in and out, having a little bit of barrier can actually, I think sometimes they just think that they can't get out for a while.
They can't. Well, and along those same lines, and yes, I think my kids were fooled by those as well. We use those for at least one or maybe two kids just in a regular twin bed.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say, when, you know, the last crib I owned had been bought maybe when William was a baby, maybe. So that was made before they banned the drop sides. So when you converted it to a toddler bed, it really just looked like a crib, but it was like lower to the ground and like the side came off, but it's still, and I don't know if that's what they still look like that's what I'm getting at. Like if that's what a convertible crib still looks like.
Yeah.
But it just felt like he was still in a crib. I think the fact that it was still a crib and it was still the same crib that he'd slept in before, made him just kind of, even though there's no side on it, and he could easily get out. It was like, he just didn't.
It was
a little bit, it's like the psychology.
Yeah, it is the psychology. And I want to say one more thing before we wrap up this question, more on like kind of the parenting side of this.
Yeah.
Because Samantha's starting so early, like you said, there's lots of time to make the transition. And I would recommend too, that you let whatever your child's reaction to all this be, let it be okay, because you've got time. So if she really resists the idea, sometimes we fall into this habit of being like, but you're a big girl now and you get this special bed and I bought the pillows and isn't it pretty and this gets to be your new place. Well, not all kids really like change or like
care.
And even as young as 1 year old that might backfire. Not all kids want to be a big kid or hearing that they have to make a transition can be not have the effect that you hoped it would, as like an incentive or a fun thing. So the nice thing about having time is if her little one is resistant to this right now, I would back off. If she shows interest, then that's cool too. Like, kind of let it be in flux, which is hard if you're a planner, but letting it be in flux and trying not to have like a top down expectation of how things are going to go. Because as we know, just like with potty training, like the harder we want them to want to do it, like the more they push back. Even these tiny little toddlers that barely can talk, you know, there's a little bit of like, mom wants me to do this, so I'm going to have a power struggle about it.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. That's good advice.
All right. Well,
who knew we had so much to say about toddlers and
beds? It's been a while. So Samantha, let us know how it goes. I love to hear kind of if people put our suggestions into implementation or what they think. So thank you, Samantha.
Thank you, Samantha.
We're going to do another question coming up here in a second, but I wanted to let our listeners know that Katie, our resident new mom, who comes on with me about once a month, you will hear from Katie and I at the end of this episode. So forgot to mention that at the top of the show, but listen all the way to the end. And Katie also is probably looking down a bed transition soon. I'll have to ask her about that. I don't think her oldest is out of the crib yet, but.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so should we do our next question?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it.
So this one came from Jess via Instagram. So she just commented on our Instagram, and I can really relate to this, and I'm sure you can too, Megan. So I'll just read it. It says, "It seems like when I'm running on empty, my automatic response to a frustrating behavior is, if you don't do this, we won't do this. Obviously, this isn't what I want to be doing. Any tips and tools you've used that would give me more in my bag of tricks to use would be appreciated. My girls are 4 and 2.5, but it doesn't have to be geared toward that specific age." So how often do we hear ourselves
like, going down there? And like, I was actually going to say it doesn't have to be geared to that specific age, but I feel like that is the specific, like the specific age combination where that kind of stuff, those frustrating behaviors, it's like 4 and 2 year olds have exactly different frustrating kinds of behaviors and they somehow magically meld together to make like the most frustration.
Yeah. So, and I think it's the ages where we start to expect them to be a little more logical. You and I have talked about this in various episodes, but like you start to expect them to behave more like humans and they're really not quite there yet. So,
and another thing that just occurred to me is you expect the 2-year-old to like look up to the 4-year-old and act like them. But often the 4-year-old starts to like almost devolve a little bit or like become more like the 2-year-old. It's kids are really funny in the way that they, I don't know, take on each other's, like the way that they whip each other up and like take on each other's behaviors. So I, you know, the first thing that stood out at me, and this is so much easier said than done, Jess, so I totally get you. But if you can like find a way to in your head before that comes out, or maybe even after it comes out, to just switch, just like flip the script a little bit. And maybe instead of if you don't blank, we won't blank, it's, hey, if you guys can blank, then we can.
Oh,
blank.
I like that.
And it just puts so much more of a positive spin on it than just threatening. I feel like the more, and I don't have to do this as much anymore in that way, just because my kids don't get as out of control anymore because they're just older. So they don't, I don't find myself in this situation, but I do remember that the minute I would say like, if you don't sit down, we're not getting ice cream.
Yeah.
And they don't, it's like they don't even hear you.
No.
It just goes in one ear and right out the other because the psychology is like don't and won't.
Right.
Are like, they don't even exist. And so all the kids hear is ice cream.
And if you have like not made good on one of those threats ever once, that's what they will latch onto. Even if you're pretty consistent and, you know, try not to make empty threats and empty bribes.
Right.
There's something like just hardwired that they just don't take you that seriously. It just sounds like mom is just wah, wah.
Mom, exactly. And I also think that when you make those specific, like, if you don't do this, we won't do that. Those kinds of threats, usually I have found I'm just punishing myself.
Yeah.
It always ends up being something where I'm like, I really wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Now I just said I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
And now, so like I said, easier said than done. But I think that like maybe just training yourself to think of it like what would be the opposite. So if I'm don't want to do this with them because they're, you know, out of control, maybe if I say if you can sit quietly for 5 minutes, then we can go to the library or whatever the thing is. So that's just my first thought. And
I love that.
It's hard.
No, I love that. And I have some thoughts that are kind of similar along the same lines. My first one, though, and Jess didn't say what type of frustrating behavior. I'm picturing in my mind, running around, being wild, maybe dawdling. We have a lot of struggles about like getting out the door. So like dawdling, bickering. I'm picturing these kinds of like normal kid behaviors. So my first tip is to be choosy about before you even open your mouth, start to train yourself to ask yourself, is this worth asking them to stop. And I really I have to work on this one because, like, you've talked about, Megan, that chaos, you're pretty good at, you know, existing in chaos.
To a degree. there's always that point, that tipping point.
And like, I find myself like wanting to tell the kids to calm down or quiet down when really there's not a huge reason that they need to. And I have to come to terms with that. So is it important that they stop this behavior? If it isn't, just distract yourself, put on some music, think about something else, and let it go. Because when you do want to ask them to change their behavior, you want it to be impactful, right? So it's kind of like pick your battles, but really, really, really pick your battles and challenge yourself on, is it, do I need to really stop, ask them to stop this behavior right now? Or is it something that's just bugging me that I could maybe let go?
That you could maybe learn to deal with. Well, I want to just add to that because yes, it is true that I am pretty good at managing chaos, especially I used to be better at it. Like, honestly, the less chaos I'm surrounded by now, the less tolerant I am. I think I was just swimming in it for so long that I just developed this like almost ability to not even register it. But there would be a day when I was particularly tired or irritable for whatever reason. And those are the days I'd find myself like becoming like droning on, like, stop it, quiet down. Like, you just kind of have this almost like dialogue, this constant dialogue going, no, don't do that. Stop this. Yeah. Why are you so loud? And the more I would do that, the more I'd whip myself up.
Yeah.
So like the more I made an expectation that then wasn't met because honestly, I was, it was an unrealistic expectation often, the more like angry and frustrated and irritated I would get because I'm wasting my, I'm literally wasting my breath.
Yeah.
And I'm putting myself in like a negative place just by the don'ts and the stops and the cut it outs. So that's just another way to look at that. Like you're not doing yourself any favors by setting that as the tone. You're just making your life harder.
Agreed. And that reminds me, most of like the psychologists and the experts would say when we don't stop what we're doing and go over to our kids and look them in the eye and say, this is too loud for inside. I need you to either go outside or find a quieter way to play. If we do it once and we go over to their level, make sure they're listening and ask them, then we have license to follow through on that. When we do it from the other room and like, hey, you guys, you know, quiet down in there. We're not really taking the time to make ourselves heard, and they for sure are not taking the time to hear us. So
they're not taking it, and we're just getting ourselves like ramped up.
But all of that is easier said than done. My other little tip is sort of like a riff off what you said about flipping the script to a positive, and that is to use language that reflects what you are willing to do, because I find this is like really empowering. So I might say like, I'm ready to go to the beach. When you guys have your shoes on and are ready to get in the car, I will take you to the beach. Like, it's more about like what, it's more about like setting my boundaries. Like, I, you know, I'm trying to think of another example off the cuff and having trouble. But when you can say what you have chosen to do, like, this is too loud for me, so I'm going to go in the other room. If you want me to play, let me know and I'll come back when it's quieter. Yeah. So then like, then you are, like I said, setting your own boundaries, saying what you have control over, and you really haven't asked them to do anything at all. You're just flipping the script and saying what's acceptable to you.
And so, even if you are asking them to do something, I think when you've prefaced it with, I need you to, it's not like, you know, naggy mom is just yelling at us. It's like, no, this is a need I have.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's for you to do this thing.
Right.
So,
and then you can always couple that with offering them a choice, you know, like all the experts would say, like, this is too loud for me. Would you like to go outside or can we find a quieter thing to play? Mm-hmm. Another thing I was going to say is, and we've kind of touched on this, but actions speak so much louder than words. So we like we just said, when you're kind of like all day, please stop, knock it off, don't hit your sister, they just get, I think, immune to our words. So however you can show them in your actions that either by sort of ignoring the negative behavior or, I don't know, just not engaging with that sort of half-hearted nagging, I think is so effective. I wanted to share one little story about this summer that I realized I spent a lot of my time getting everybody out the door and into the car. And we don't even have that busy a schedule, but I still feel like it's like, okay, everybody get your shoes on. Okay, we're going to go do this. I realized at the start of summer that about half the places we go in the summer are not for me. Like, I could care less if we get to the pool at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. It doesn't cramp my style either way.
Right.
I fully stopped acting like the cruise ship director getting everyone out the door if it wasn't someplace that I wanted to be or that we really had to be at a certain time. And it was amazing. The kids would be like, they'd come up to me. I wouldn't even mention it. If they wanted to go to the library or whatever, I just start doing my work, doing the dishes, and eventually someone will come up to me and be like, I thought we were going to the library. And I'll just say, yeah, I'm ready when you are.
Yeah.
And they just are like, oh. And my kids are old enough now, right? Like, they are all capable of getting their shoes on, getting their library books, and getting in the car, getting ready to get in the car. So that's just an example of action speaking way louder than words. I haven't told them once to get in the car. And then it saves my breath for those times when, okay, we do have to be at swim lessons at 9:30. And I do care about that because I've paid for it. So I will use my, you know, we've talked about being active managers in the morning, getting everybody out the door. I was doing it more than I had to. And so maybe that brings us back to where we started with Jess, is pick the times when you really need to be effective. Mm-hmm. And then
it made me think of when you said saving your breath, you're also saving your capital. Like, you only have a certain amount of currency, right? And save it, because you don't want to use it all up on things that don't matter to you.
Yeah. And it takes practice. None of this is easy.
What I was going to say is, you know how our slogan is kind of like, it's all going to be okay?
Yeah.
I think our new slogan should be easier said than done.
Yeah. Yes. And that's like a little asterisk. Yeah. There's like a fine print. Fine print. Easier said than done. So Jess, let us know what you thought of this advice. And also, I wanted to give our listeners a preview. I'm interviewing Catherine Perlman, who is a friend of ours and an author. She has a new book coming out called Ignore It. It's about how selectively ignoring certain behaviors can actually help stop them.
Of course, she
doesn't advocate ignoring everything. And we'll get into that when I interview her. But I think this question feeds nicely into that, because so much of what we do as moms is engage with our kids on things that it's not helpful. Like, it's not helpful.
I totally agree. Yeah.
So that's going to be a really fun conversation. Look for it. It'll be out the first Friday in August, depending on when you are listening to this. So that'll be a good follow-up as well. So that was fun.
Cool.
All right. Well, Megan, I feel like you have something kind of to share with us before we get to our last question.
I do. Okay. So about, I don't know, was it a week ago or so? Well, that the week in podcast land is just relative. So it was a while ago that I sent out a survey asking for listeners to let me know about a course I was potentially thinking about putting together. And I just kind of asked, like, what, you know, would be interesting to you and where you are in sort of your parenting journey and where you are as a mom as far as taking care of yourself and that kind of thing. And so it was so great, you guys. Like, 100 people took the survey within a couple of days.
That's amazing.
Which thrilled me.
Yeah,
I was thrilled. And there were really good responses, like really thoughtful. People really told me a lot about where they are. And some of the, you know, some of the things people said surprised me, and other things didn't at all. But what I learned was that the vast majority of the respondents are interested really in kind of the foundations, like learning to manage their time better, pay better attention to their physical health, mother more mindfully, but also finding or making space for themselves. So a lot of people said, I think fully half said that they know they want to add something or change something, but they just don't know what that thing is yet. And I was thinking this was going to be more of like a business or creative kind of course. Like, I want to start this. And I will say, like, a good chunk of people are also interested in that. But I felt like there's this need for a foundations kind of class.
Yeah.
Where it's based, it's just getting kind of your ducks in a row, figuring out who you want to be in this world of motherhood and who you want to be as a mom and a person. And then opening yourself up to adding on other things outside of that.
Right.
So community building was really important. Flexibility was really important.
Yes.
And encouraging and non-judgmental space to ask questions and work through issues. Not surprisingly, that was also really important to the vast majority of the respondents. So based on that criteria, I have created a course called Mothers of Reinvention. And
love
I'm
it.
Really excited about this. Ah, I'm so excited. First of all, I couldn't believe that name's not taken, but it's not.
So there was
a book by the name a long time ago, but there's like nothing going on online with that name. So I was like really excited because it's perfect. It like totally sums up what I'm getting at here. And the class is going to help you build yourself from the inside out. So focusing on yourself, your family, your surroundings, and your time. So you kind of build that foundation for more confidence as a mom, and then also make the space to add more things in later. So this course is going to start on September 12th. It's 10 weeks long.
Okay.
It's going to go through November 14th, which is 10 weeks. It ends right before the holidays get rolling. So you don't have to worry about overlap there. And it's going to include weekly activities and prompts, weekly video chats with me, where you'll have an opportunity to ask questions, and we'll be workshopping some journal entries and things things like that. You can also watch those later at your convenience. So
yeah, I was going to jump in and ask, like, how much scheduled time, when we say course, people picture different things.
But yes,
pretty much all able to do on your own time, correct?
You can totally do this on your own time. Again, the vast majority of people said they have about an hour to 2 hours max to work on something like this in a week. That said, a good chunk said 3 to 4 hours or more. So you can always spend more time. And that's the other thing I want to make clear. Like, this is the kind of course where you get out what you put in.
Right.
And also, you can be there live when I'm doing the video. Yeah. You can show up every week on time if you want.
Right.
But you aren't in any way obligated. You can watch it on your own time. You can watch it on your own time a month later. You don't really have to. There's no reason you have to do it
right. The
way it's rolled out. Now, I will say, the community building, what tends to happen is people get excited about stuff all at once. So if you really want to be a part of that community, you might want to at least set aside some time to engage in real time, or at least like the week the activity or prompt comes out,
right. Engage
with it that week. But that doesn't mean, it's not like a homework thing where there's going to be a test at the end of the week,
but,
and you have to.
But, you know, I think for so many people, actually, that structure is so needed. I mean, it's nice to say you can do it on your own time, but the times that I have taken something like this, I need someone telling me, answer these questions this week. I mean, we all do. Otherwise, we'd do this on our own and there wouldn't be a need for courses like this.
Right, absolutely.
So,
exciting. You know, it's a schedule. It is a routine and scheduled thing. It's just, you can take the content with you and use it later again if you want to.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to show up at your house and yell at you if you miss a week. So
you are incapable of doing that. I've known you for too long. I've seen you try to be mean.
I'll just be very gently encouraging. How about that? So there's a journaling component. There's going to be a community component. I'm really, really excited about it. The class will be $89, and we're going to have an early bird rate available until August 1st, which is $79. And
nice.
There's also going to be a class starting in January that's going to be for those people that, I want to say 20%, who also kind of want to move on and focus on work-related life changes, like launching a new career, starting a business, going back to school, or pursuing a creative passion. It'll be structured similarly, but smaller.
Deeper.
And more hands-on.
Yeah.
So if you want to go ahead and find out more about the class or sign up, just go to themomhour.com, look up the show notes for this episode, which is episode 111, and there will be a link there where you can find out more and register.
I love this. So for longtime listeners, you guys know this, but a lot of people probably don't, that Megan, you and I met when I took an online course that you taught.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So, I mean, this is different. It was a freelance writing class, but some of the core things that I loved about that class, I think, will absolutely be present here. So I'm so excited to see what you do with this. I'm just excited for people who get to work with you in this way. So again, early bird rate till August 1st. Go to themomhour.com, find the show notes for 111, and everything will be there.
Everything will be there.
Yay, I'm excited.
And I wanted to also mention, we are going to leave the survey up. So if you didn't take it yet, but you still want to weigh in on it, we can link to that as well in the show notes.
Good idea.
I never mind getting more feedback, even though the class has kind of already come together. I always love to hear where people are.
Yeah.
It helps me develop the materials.
And we should say, too, if you are listening to this like a year in the future, this is 2017, which happens, people do, just always hit up Megan or us on social media, because who knows what courses Megan will be offering, and you might have missed out for this one, but it doesn't mean that there won't be other opportunities like this.
Yep, so for sure.
Awesome. Okay, so we've got one more listener question, and then we've also got my segment with Katie, which will be at the very end of this episode. So do you want to set this one up, Megan?
Sure, I will read this one. So this is Tessa. She chimed in via Instagram. I love that people are giving us questions via Instagram, by the way.
I love our Instagram community, actually.
Yes, and it's just such a great way for us to get these questions. So here's what Tessa has to say. She says, I would love to do more fun things in the evenings with my kids, 1, 5, 8, and 10, but I feel like by the time we clean up dinner, and then in parentheses, I'm trying to get everyone to pitch in more, but they do a pretty good job with that already, plus factor in time for them to get ready for bed, bath, showers, that we have no time for anything else. I love to play a board game with them, read books, go for a bike ride or walk, and I always encourage them to hurry up and get their things done so we can do something fun, but it almost takes too long, or they squander their time away instead of getting their things done, and then we don't get to the activity. They might be disappointed or not, but it's never incentive enough for them to get their act together the next time so we can do it something fun. My husband works late regularly, so it's just me trying to manage them. But when he's home, obviously it helps with the situation. Any suggestions for this? Oh boy, Tessa, I feel you.
I know. I thought of you. Yeah, yeah. Like having four, those are pretty close to ages that you had at one point.
Yeah. And you've got a 1-year-old, man. So this is like, you've got four kids under 10 and under, and one is a baby.
Yeah.
So my first thing, I think the first suggestion I would make is, Is there a way to restructure your evenings so that there's just less time needed for the other stuff?
And amen. It's
prioritizing if like spending time with them sitting down and you know, playing a board game or reading is more important to you or very important to you. And I think you can even like, if you're more planning, I think you could even literally write down all the things that are important to you and then decide where they rank. And, you know, honestly, maybe making a full dinner every night isn't more important to you than spending time with your kids. It's just that that's one of those things you feel like you should do that's getting in the way. So I think that that is the first place to start is like, how can you restructure everything else, you know, so that those things can become the priority of the evening.
Right.
I don't think it has to be every evening. So if it's really important to you to sit down to a full meal, like three nights a week, do that. And then try to do the other thing like four nights a week or whatever. It can also be at a different time of the day. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Like,
okay.
It doesn't have to be evening. Am I saying all your stuff?
Yeah. You're taking all my stuff, but it's okay. Cause I'm just amening all over the place.
Okay.
So baths and showers, I think a long time ago, you and I both confessed that pre-puberty, our children don't get baths and showers every night. Like babies do, because then it's kind of fun and it's like almost easier to put like a 6-month-old and a 18-month-old in the bath together, and it's like it uses up your time. But after after age 2 or 3, especially when that's the youngest kid, so my kids get full baths and wash hair, like the full deal, 2 times a week probably. So that's one thing. You can bathe less. You're allowed to. You can leave dishes in the sink. I do routinely. I do most dinner dishes in the morning every single night. I have zero guilt about leaving dinner dishes in the sink. But that's me. If it eats you up inside and you hate it, don't take that advice. But for me, like I just, it's not a trigger for me. So yes, do less. Do things at different times a day. Especially, we're recording this in the summer. It's not always summer. But if you have the opportunity maybe to give the baby a bath earlier in the day or the 5-year-old a bath in the afternoon when the older kids are doing their homework, like baths before dinner, we do that all the time. So yes and yes. Another thing I was going to say, because I am more of the planner type, is we've started just a few like weekly rituals where the kids know what to expect. So on Sunday nights, we call it Sunday night read-in, and everybody gets in our big master bed, like our king size bed, with a book, and we light candles to make it seem like it's something special. But honestly, it was a way for me to use up Sunday evenings when it was really hot and we didn't have anything else to do. So it started out of like a necessity, but because I gave it a name and because we light candles, it feels special. And honestly, it's not even that fun every week because Violet can't read independently yet. So somebody's got to quietly read aloud. But there's something that's sort of like warm and fuzzy just about the fact that there is a ritual and the kids come to expect it. So if, like you said, Megan, deciding what the priorities are, I love the idea of a bike ride or walk. We do not, I would like to do more of that type of stuff in the evening, and we really don't. But if that's the thing, if that's like the core goal, then having that maybe be part of a weekly ritual so that that way as a mom, you're not feeling guilty like, dang it, another night went by and we didn't go for a walk. Instead, it's like, okay, on Tuesdays, that's our walk night. And then that's the day that you skip baths or you do an easy dinner. So then it all sort of starts to fall into place based on those priorities.
I totally agree. You fleshed it out and gave it some more meat. So another thing I will say is like, when I saw the go for a bike ride, the first thing I thought was, well, why couldn't that just be done first thing in the morning? And then what you end up doing, like say, and you know, if the kids are in school or whatever, maybe on a Saturday, but then you end up structuring the rest of your day around that thing you really wanted to do rather than cram it in at the end after everything else. There's one more thing I want to say, Tessa, and I think it sounds like you're putting a lot of the onus on your kids to care enough to do this. And I think that expectation may be a little high for them, given their ages and the fact that like kids' understanding of the passage of time is very different than ours. And I don't just mean time like the hours that are going by right now or the minutes that it's taking them because they're, you know, frittering away their time or they're just kind of screwing around. But also like the passage of time overall, they're not really seeing their childhood slip through their fingers the way you are. Right. Yeah. So to them, it's like, oh, well, we didn't get to, like you said, you know, so they might be disappointed or not. To them, it's just not as big of a deal. It's not like it's not a should to them. It's not like a thing that they feel strongly about. Right. It's just one more night of fun and a kid's, you know, endless life of fun. So it's like, gosh, I sound kind of bitter. But I think if this is important to you, the kind of you kind of have to take it you're going to have to take charge.
Yes. I agree. Declaring that it's important to you is different than expecting it to be important to them. And both are okay. It is okay if a bike ride after dinner is important to you. And it's okay if you make it happen, whether they want to or not. The other thing I was going to say is kids don't have, even as kids get older, they don't have the adult sensibility that, like, I'm going to get all my work done fast, right, so I can enjoy myself later. Because they're probably enjoying themselves the whole time.
Fun.
Yeah, they're not thinking like, okay, I'm going to brush my teeth and get my pajamas on and do that so I can enjoy myself. Like, they're enjoying themselves. So they have, you're right, Tessa, you've hit the nail on the head that it's not, there's no like intrinsic motivation for them to work now, play later. So I think that's an invitation
to
mix things up and to take back the things that are really important to you, maybe put some ritual around them, or like, I think like we started with this, do less in the evening, man. I don't really like evenings at all. We've talked about
Done with the day by 6.
Sometimes I'm done with the day by like 3:30, but I've talked about my energy patterns that I'm just not great in the evening. I never get that second wind. So for me, being like necessity only, bare bones, like, that's always been kind of how I roll in the evenings. And so I've come to accept that about myself. But Tessa, you're doing awesome. You have 4 kids, 10 and under, including a 1-year-old. So
Go easy on yourself.
And
claim the stuff that matters to you.
Yeah. And claim evenings and create at least 1 or 2 a week that kind of go the way you want. And that way, you know, if the rest don't, that's okay. That's a good question. Okay. So before we wrap, I just want to remind listeners that you can get our deal from Kind Snacks at kindsnacks.com/themomhour. That's where you'll get a variety pack assortment box delivered to your door. It's $10 and free shipping is included in that. And it's over $30 worth of snacks in that little box. So you will be happy you got that. And then keep listening and you will hear Katie and I with the latest what's going on in her life as a new mom or mom of a toddler and a baby, as so many of our listeners have. So that's all I got. Megan, can you remind everybody about where to check out your course?
Yep. So it's the Mothers of Reinvention course, and that will be at themomhour.com. Just go to episode 111, and someplace in the show notes, we will have a link to it. You could also just search, Mothers of Reinvention on themomhour.com, and it'll come up that way as well.
Awesome. That's a great opportunity. Well, thanks, everybody. We will be back with you next week, and stay with us for Katie. Hey, everyone. It's Sarah, and I'm back here with Katie Addis. Hey, Katie.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Sarah.
So Katie comes on with me, as you guys know, about once a month to talk about what's going on in her life as a new mom or mom of a toddler and a baby. So we usually go through one struggle, one success, and one discovery in Katie's life in this stage of motherhood. So what do you have for us today, Katie?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and start with a success because it's been a long time coming, listeners, and I think I briefly mentioned it as a struggle for another day.
So struggles become successes.
Struggles become successes. So drum roll, Anna Lee is finally potty trained.
Yay!
Yeah, we were down to the wire. She needed to be potty trained in order to start her preschool, which she's newly enrolled in. Okay. So we're very much in a place of transition in life, which I feel like all of motherhood, you're always going through sort of some sort of transition,
Definitely. But
especially in the early years, the
transitions they're like come close faster. Together. Yeah, agreed.
So we're in the transition of getting on a new routine. She's in preschool 3 mornings a week. Luke is in a phase of teething. And so we're in a transition of nap strikes as our social media played that. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. We mentioned that on Instagram the other day. Remind everybody how old they are right at this moment in time.
So Anna Lee is a little over 2.5. She'll be 3 in December. Okay. And then Luke is newly 10 months old. Well, okay. I guess 10 and a half months old now.
All right.
So the success is that she's potty trained and she's very proficient. I have nothing to compare it to in terms of quickness of, you know, how quick a study she was, but we did boot camp style where 3 days, that was our sole focus.
Yeah, I did that too with my first.
Oh, with your first. Yep. Okay, so maybe it's a first kid thing, maybe it's a personality thing.
Yeah, I think it could be either one. Yeah, I tried it with my second kid twice and it didn't work. So
okay.
But again, is it the kid? Is it you? Is it the stage of life? So I think it's definitely worth a try. It did work for me the first time.
Okay, so same here. And we are free of props and we are free of kid potties.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, like portable potty seats and stuff. That's nice to not have them need that.
So nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the portable kid potty seat that inserts into the toilet.
Either one.
Yeah. So we don't have the freestanding or that.
Let me just jump in just for listeners whose kids are younger. I almost think those are more useful when your kid is in the quote unquote interested phase, but you're not really getting rid of diapers yet. So you like have them in the bathroom. The kid thinks it's fun and funny to sit down and try, you know, you clap and get excited and talk about the potty. But I feel like once you're really potty training, I really don't like my kids to have a reliance on those, because then it's so hard to go if they're used to their little tiny potty seat, either the one that sits on top of the toilet or the freestanding one. Then when you're at a friend's house and you're out and about, it's like this whole thing. So I almost feel like we used them more in that like pre-potty training phase, whatever that looked like, which is sometimes months or a year long. Mm-hmm. But when it was like time to for real ditch the diapers, I tried to kind of get rid of those.
Yeah, I absolutely think that once your child is peeing on the potty and going number two on the potty, that then you go through this whole phase of integrating them into situations where they can be adaptable.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Adaptability is huge. Yes. So she's fully, it's awesome.
Yay.
It's awesome. So backing up my discovery with potty training, kind of one thing that we implemented while doing the boot camp and even prior, and I quote unquote call it boot camp just because it was
today. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But so leading up to that, I did something that I discovered called a social story.
Okay.
Have you heard of that before? Okay. So a social story is basically writing and drawing out on paper with a pencil your child into a story,
okay,
depicting them doing a skill that you want them to acquire
with them, they are the main character, and then you're reading and talking to her about it.
Exactly.
So like, I mean, sounds right out of like a therapist's office, like in a good way. I mean,
in a good
way. That's like a cool tool.
Well, it is a psychology tool used. So it was so awesome because anybody can make it. I mean, we're talking stick figure drawings here, which is about my artistic ability, stick figures. I should really have your kids draw. I mean, I know.
Allegra could illustrate it. Yeah,
that would have been nice. But my, story was Anna Lee uses the potty. And I actually got this from my friend who is a behavioral therapist. And I can actually link to her resource.
Yeah. If there's an article, let's link to that. That's a great idea. I've never heard of that.
But what I love about it is that you can apply this social story, like I said, to any skill, not just potty training, but let's say new moms out there, you're thinking of having a second child or something. You can orient the child in, with them as the main character, getting a little sister or a little brother.
In this very episode, you guys heard us talk about the transition to a big girl bed. So that would be another time where it's like Anna Lee stays in her big girl bed every night. You know,
exactly.
I can see how, it's totally like behavioral therapy, but I love it.
Yes.
That's great.
And my friend, the behavioral therapist, she actually linked a whole video talking through her own daughter's story, her own daughter's social story for a big girl bed.
Okay.
So we can link to that video.
I feel like you could also use that for slightly older kids when it comes to like conquering fears or anxieties, like, giving them, empowering them in the story to be brave and face the thing that they don't want to do. Or I feel like there could be a lot of uses for that.
That's so really many, cool. So Very many cool. applications. Yes. So then my struggle. So we're kind of doing this in a random order. We're ending on a struggle, but it's something that I'm working through and probably will work through for the rest of my life. So I'm almost embarrassed.
Sarah, she is embarrassed.
Katie's embarrassed
right now. She's like blushing.
I know. Okay. So this is my struggle, is that I struggle using the proper terminology for the
genitals.
See, even that elicits a schoolgirl chuckle from me. It's just like my little pre-adolescent self rears its pimply, ugly head.
Yeah, and giggles.
And
is shy. Okay, I get that.
And so I know the rational educator side of me, and
I want to do best.
I know that I'm doing the possibly a disservice even if I don't use the proper terminology. On the flip side, I feel like there's maybe, I don't know, an age appropriateness for certain terms, to be super clinical. I mean, I'm not using super clinical terminology other parts.
I don't think there's a too young for clinical language, because kids are learning language and labels for everything they encounter. So they're not embarrassed by it.
That's true.
You're like, Anna Lee, that's a cow. Anna Lee, that's a vulva. Like, I just said it. Do you know what I mean? So they're not embarrassed about it. However, let me help you with this a little bit, because I don't think it has to be all or nothing. I think we're looking at the continuum of a long period of learning, and kids are going to figure out that there's different names for all kinds of things. I think the words that you use in your house can be maybe from a grab bag. I think over time it is important that kids learn the clinical names.
Absolutely.
And that they learn the very specific body parts. Like Megan and I, when we did that episode, so if you wanted to go back, it's our Voices series, episode 12, where we talked to a sex and development expert on talking to kids about all kinds of these types of topics. But Megan shared that, you know, Clara was using the word butt for like the whole area, at an age of 6 or 7 or whatever. Maybe she was 5. But so I do think that over time that there's different anatomical areas. They're not all your bottom or your butt.
Right.
And that the clinical terms are important over time. I don't think you have to be completely strict about it with a 2.5-year-old right off the bat. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, is there room for gray area? I think so. But I would start practicing getting over your embarrassment sooner rather than later. Because guess what? The kids aren't going to be embarrassed about it for a long time. So I almost think, like, especially if there's no other adults in the house, just force yourself to do it. Just force yourself to do it. Like, find one word or one body part that you're willing to be clinical about and just do it, because you're the only one with the embarrassment. She's not. She doesn't know that it's any different. And then in terms of what words she uses for her body parts, like with other adults, I think it's important that kids can communicate. I mean, I think we've talked about that in that episode, but, you know, there's research showing that if a kid is ever abused or molested, that if they have the proper terminology, they can actually explain what happened to them.
Absolutely.
So that's like a safety reason why you would. But also just making it normal, making it not embarrassing for her.
Right.
So that's like, so you're practicing getting over your embarrassment, and you're just giving her words one at a time, little by little, just like she's going to acquire language about everything in the world little by little.
Yes. I guess I see a potential here for writing my own self into a social story.
Katie
grows comfortable.
Says the word penis. That's our story.
Yes. Yes. So I guess, okay, can I just say one more thing? As an English teacher who appreciates language and who definitely recognizes and just appreciates poetic sounds of language, I just have to say that the clinical terms are just not pretty
words. I think that's in your head. Sorry. I think that we've been conditioned to be embarrassed. And okay,
So I'm a product of how it went wrong.
It's fine. You don't have to beat yourself up for the past, but think about how little hang-ups Anna Lee has about this. Do you know what I mean?
Know.
So just start small. Like, start with one or two body parts, and it is literally no different than nose or ears, head, shoulders, knees, and toes. It just isn't. So I agree. I feel uncomfortable, especially if there's other adults listening to me.
And I don't think I'm alone.
You're not alone. And I relate as well. I do. But I feel like you have an opportunity to start
small
now.
Okay.
And if no other adults are listening, like, just be embarrassed and just do it anyway. Yes. I don't know. Okay. Listeners, what do you guys think? Hit us up with an email, hello@themomhour.com, or leave a comment on the show notes.
Or encourage me.
Just encourage your
general encouragement.
Just small steps. I'm agreeing with you. I don't think you have to be overly clinical right from the start, like you're reading from a textbook. I think whatever vocabulary feels comfortable to you and your kid is fine. I just would have it in the back of your mind as a goal.
So I'm
definitely not like trying to say that there's only one way here, but but I feel like you can start small.
Okay. Sounds good. So has that been everything?
Discovery, struggle.
Yes.
So all of the things Katie and I discussed, as well as everything Megan and I discussed, will be at themomhour.com. This was episode 111, and Katie will be back with us very soon. Thanks, Katie.
Sounds good. Bye, guys.